Harlequin, the etymology of Harlequin, the medieval Italian, they called them the Alecchino. The Halec means devil, and the Eno means little, so it means little devil. But there's also the Alecchino, also the alchemist. Alchem, the old name for Egypt, the dark lands. Yeah, I guess, you know, the devil, the Halec, is, you know, the division of the eve when it gets dark at the end of the day, the eve. So it's the division of light and dark. So at eve, it's dark. So, yeah, alchemy, it's in the medieval Latin, alchemia. The Arabic is chemia, Greek chemioa. The Greek chemiotos means to pour out. Chem means to pour. Alchemy is the transmutation of elements, turning gold, lead into gold. Is this metaphorical, or is this, you know, physically possible to make stuff just come out of nowhere? And well, myth or not, it's interesting to see what has happened with banking, with the gold standard. Like, all the gold's gone and it's replaced with digits or paper. So you know, funny how things turn out. Centuries ago, there's loads of alchemists and they're all trying to make gold for the king, and everyone's working really hard and trying to make gold. And then nowadays we don't even need gold. Well, the banks or the system, or, you know, whatever, like, taking away the gold standard, it's kind of done one better than the alchemists were trying to do. Well, they've made infinite funds, what the alchemists are trying to do. So, I was fascinated to learn of the royal courts, and, you know, yeah, magic has always been a very old tradition in the royal families. But, you know, as the occult really does just mean secret, or, you know, hermetics, it means sealed, sealed shut. The, you know, for example, Prince Charles is in the magic circle. The club with, like, Paul Daniels and Darren Brown and Dynamo. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure they know a trick or two. Or, you know, but it's interesting with what the Royal Academies of Drama and Theatre, their productions, or any royal charter like the BBC, you know, TV in general, came out of the coronation of Queen Elizabeth. It was a very big generation culture shift. TV and all, I'd say. Most people, if you haven't gone and found out firsthand information, you know, you learn it on TV. TV's taught people, you know, generations a lot. Like, there's some people that don't use computers, and they just get their information from news and TV. And I feel that all that information from those sources are very well kind of, like, filtered to a degree, you know. Because, you know, throughout history, the royals have dictated reality. You know, before it was the church, and they're like, yeah, this really happened. If you don't go along with it, I recommend you just go along with it, you know. But now people watch, they learn about nature on TV. Or, you know, like, if you've never been into a law court, all the information that you know about law, if you haven't studied law, is, like, through movies and TV, and it's just having a different education. But, yeah, to turn lead into gold, I think it's, so, like, the gold must represent, like, must be enlightenment or whatever. And the lead just means like, ooh, heavy. I don't know. Ooh, it's pretty heavy. But it's like the feelings, like with the theatre masks, you've got like the happy face and the sad face. And like sad face is like, ooh, I feel down and ooh, and you're crying. I guess that's like the lead. And then the happy one is like the gold. So like, you know, paradoxically, if you're crying so much that it, you know, your body's shaking, like, and it's just like laughing, it's like hysterically laughing, like, it's the same thing your body does, it's like both extremes, or, you know, but they're both like reactions, and sometimes they're just unavoidable, but like hysterically laughing. And I think this is kind of the state of, kind of, you know, you're in a state of non-thought, and it's almost like transcendental. It reminds me of what the tarot says of the Fool. The first card, it's the zero card, and the Fool, he's on the edge of a cliff, holding a bindle, and he's got his eyes closed, and he's not bothered about falling over the edge. In the old days, the king would have fools in the courts for entertainment, because they said that the fool was divinely inspired, you know, when, yeah, and they're highly humorous, so he always had like a fool or two. But with the concept of, you know, what the fool is, I think is, you know, a state of, I guess, total trust, because he's got his eyes closed and he's carelessly walking very close to a cliff. He's going to fall, but he's only to fall to fill, to full up. Because I think with how nature has its cycles, we have the seasons and we have psychological cycles processing that reflect and they synchronize with nature. I think, you know, to study the seasons, and that's pretty much astrology, how, yeah, nature reflects the inner psyche. As it's the sun goes over the sky east to west every day, and, you know, all the other planets follow it, it's a cycle. And when you're in a cycle, you're forever falling into something new. So, you know, it is just that sort of existence itself. It's you're just forever falling into the mystery. You know, even if you knew what was going on, you're still... I refer the fool to the Tao Te Ching, like Lao Tzu's philosophy of the Tao, and that state of mind where, you know, I mean, you can't know everything in one lifetime. You know, you can't say everything you know all in one go. Or it's just that state of mind where it's clarity of mind, and within that clarity, you get all. Whatever you, it's just the higher mind, you know, it's more within intuition. It was Aristotle who said, science can explain everything apart from where all the concepts and theories and, you know, research originate from, and that's inspiration and the intuition, like this well of knowledge where it comes from nowhere, or, you know, it's spontaneity, or it's, you know, just that thought that came in your head when you're walking in the woods, or like having a bath, and you had a moment of just no mind, and the thought hit you, like when Isaac Newton invented the apple. But yeah, I mean, if the classic fool in Shakespeare in nearly every single one of his plays, he's had the fool play a role. And, you know, the jester, the harlequin, the alchemist, Phil, if you're going along with, like, the three first cards of the tarot, the fool, the magician, and the high priestess, in the fool's bindle is all the magician's bits and bobs, his elements. Yeah, his elements. So the fool, he doesn't care about what he knows. He's not thinking of anything. He's just doing it. He's just in a constant state of kind of like, you know, trust. And then the magician knows of his, like, talents and his individuality. And the one is the sun. The symbol for the sun is a circle with a dot in the middle. And I think if you look at the number one in bird's eye view, it looked like a dot, a circle with a dot in the middle. That's the magician is Aries, because the sun, the first sign the sun exalts in is Aries. Number two is the moon, and the second card is the high priestess. She's between the two pillars of the Temple of Solomon. And that's the fall of spirit into matter. Because the one, the sun, it enters duality at two. And you enter the temple, you meet the high priestess, you know, you enter between the two pillars into Solomon's temple. And Solomon is Sol-O-Mon, the sun and moon. And you enter the temple, and that's like Mother Moon, material matter. That's like the moon of Mother Moon. We're in the womb. We're like, the ancient Egyptians said that we're all, the stars were seeds in the goddess's belly. That's the first fall, but it's the exalted fall, because it's aiming high, it's aiming upwards towards Cancer, and Cancer is the second fall, where you fell, because of the summer solstice. The sun would fall, the days we get shorter. Cancerians, so they're kind of they cry babies. I think that's the second fall, and the third is Libra and Scorpio, where it gets dark, and the sun gets its sting off the Scorpio and Sagittarius, the archer, the teacher, shoots it with its bow and kills it at the gates of death, the winter solstice, when the sun doesn't move. And that's the last fall. And then there's a new, it's born anew, and it's going only upwards, so it's the exalted fall. So with the exalted falling, it's the filling, and then when it's falling from top to bottom, it's the full. It's the cycle has a lot to do with ego death and how people naturally learn. It goes through psychological processing. Sometimes when an ego gets hurt, there's sometimes decisive decisions to make with oneself on the personal issues of concern when an ego gets hurt. And I can see the best way on dealing with any upset is to see the humor in it, be the fool. But yeah, easier said than done, I guess.
Joel?
Yeah?
Tarot cards, Right, on the very basic knowledge, the first card, or is it the zero card for the Fool?
I know. Like, to start on zero, not start on one. I think it's just mathematic philosophies. Like, the zero and the one, they're kind of the same, but they're not. Or they're what qualities numbers have.
Is there a number one card?
Yeah, there is.
What's that one?
That one's called the Magician.
What would the last card be if it was one?
Last one? I want to say paradoxically the Fool. Or, where is the last one? I think it's Judgment.
I think Prajna's got something to say. Prajna?
I was just wondering, Joel, if you've come across Osho's Zen Tarot and what he has to say about the Fool.
No, what does he say about it?
He says a fool is one who goes on trusting. A fool is one who goes on trusting against all his experience. You deceive him and he trusts you. You deceive him again and he trusts you. You deceive him again and he trusts you. And then you will say that he is a fool. He does not learn. His trust is tremendous. His trust is so pure that nobody can corrupt it. Be a fool in the Taoist sense, in the Zen sense. Don't try to create a wall of knowledge around you. Whatsoever experience comes to you, let it happen, and then go on dropping it. Go on cleaning your mind continuously. Go on dying to the past so you remain in the present. Here now, as if just born, just a babe. In the beginning, it's going to be very difficult. The world will start taking advantage of you. Let them. They are poor fellows. Even if you are cheated and deceived and robbed, let it happen, because that which is really yours cannot be robbed from you. That which is really yours, nobody can steal from you. And every time you don't allow situations to corrupt you, that opportunity will become an integration inside. Your soul will become more crystallized. And then he's got a little bit of commentary on the card as well, about, because the Osho Zen Tarot has got lovely pictures on it. And this particular picture has got a cliff, and the fool is holding a bunch of flowers in his hands and stepping out into nothingness from the edge of the cliff. And the commentary is moment to moment, and with every step, the fool leaves the past behind. He carries nothing more than his purity, innocence, and trust, symbolized by the white rose in his hand. The pattern on his waistcoat contains the colors of all four elements of the tarot, indicating that he is in harmony with all that surrounds him. His intuition is functioning at its peak. At this moment, the fool has the support of the universe to make this jump into the unknown. Adventures await him on the river of life. This card indicates that if you trust your intuition right now, your feeling of the rightness of things, you cannot go wrong. Your actions may appear foolish to others, or even to yourself, if you try to analyze them with the rational mind. But the zero place, occupied by the fool, is the numberless number where trust and innocence are the guides, not skepticism and past experience. That ties in quite well with what you've just been talking about, doesn't it?
Just a bit.
I do like Osho's Zen Tarot deck. It has some wonderful stuff in. And interesting, Carly said that she drew the Fool today as one of the cards that...
Yeah. I did myself a reading today, and the Fool came out in the top position, the position of consciousness in this particular reading, which was... And then you come along talking about the Fool and the court jester. But, Robo, your question about what is the last card, well, you got... First of all, through the Major Arcane, which I don't know what the last card in Ordinary Tarot is for the Major Arcane. It could be Judgment, as Joel said. And then you go through the minor arcane. So there isn't really a last card. But in the Osho Zen tarot, I think the last card in the major arcane is the Master. Yes, I'm right. It is the Master.
Is there like 74 cards and 22 then major, whatever it's called? Is that right?
Let's have a look on the front of the book because it tells us this somewhere.
That's right.
So in this particular deck, there are 79 cards, and I think it's the first... Prashna's got the book, so I can't see. It's the first 45 major arcane.
Oh, no, those are the page numbers.
Oh, those are the page numbers.
So that's 22 cards. In the major arcana.
You have to count the Master as well. I mean, he also occupies a place of no number.
Yep, numberless. But the Fool is zero.
Anyway, so there you go.
Is there something with a chariot in it? I can remember a Steve Illich album, I think, we used a chariot in that. Might have been another band.
That's Cancer. That's related to Cancer. I don't know. Obviously people say a lot of things about it. I found some stuff I can crap on about. Alright. So, if you YouTube Order of the Garter, you'll see videos of the Queen and other people in the Chivalrous Order of Knights. The Dukes, Earls, Kings and Queens, Prime Ministers, Baronesses. They do a fashion parade down Windsor Castle in June soon. And they all dress up in black cloaks and they got feathers in their hats and it's a knighthood order. And the paraphernalia of there's military generals there and soldiers and these, they're called, the officer of the arms. And to me, they look like Harlequins. Well, their colours are red, blue, gold. I'm interested in them. They're they hang out with beef burgers or yeomen or guard or whatever. Yeah. So there's the one in the Victorian times, William Weldon. He was an interesting guy. He lived in Tavistock House. After the social critic, famous novelist Charles Dickens left, he lived there for quite a while, rebuilt it to what we know now as Tavistock House. This guy had loads of ludicrous titles, honorary, rah, 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 loads of them. The interesting thing about this guy, he's high up in the Order of the Garter. He used to own a circus, and his wife, she became very spiritual. And what we know of, what I'm trying to say is the royals were really into magic. So his wife grew really spiritual and turned the house into an orphanage. This has, connections with what we know now as Tavistock, the Institute, and Tavistock Clinic, and what history, Tavistock Clinic down Abbey Road originally was created to help war victims of shell shock. Nowadays, Tavistock is social research think bubble sort of government. Whatchamajig. I'm interested with, Freud and the Tavistock Clinic. Freud was funded by Princess Mary Bonaparte. She's the great-great-grandniece of Napoleon. She liked him because she sorted the problem out. She couldn't orgasm, and he helped her to do that. She really liked that, so she funded him and hung out with him a lot. Yeah, and just interesting to see the funding. Her great-great-granduncle, Napoleon, was really interested in Egypt. He blew holes out of the sides of the pyramids and checked them out. And, you know, just like all the other royals, really fascinated with what Egypt's got to have. You know, Kem. Napoleon, which was Egypt at the time, he nowadays, like, Gaza area. Napoleon went there in 1799, and he declared it. He said, this is the Jews' land. This is the home of the Jews. But, you know, looking at the Tavistock Clinic, Tavistock House, I want to bring up a character called the Andorran Doro, which I think has a lot to do with the 60s boom. What happened to, you know, this culture shock we had called the 60s and what ripple effects it has had since. From World War II, there was a lot of Nazi families migrating to the Americas. And, you know, it's quite, you know, there's loads of different colonies in America. Like, there's lots of Italian fascists that, you know, hid in America. There's, yeah, well, Nazi families went over. Some came to Britain because, well, you know, the Queen, she's, you know, Saxe, Coburg, you know, a strong family, a German family. Yeah, the Andorran Doro. He's really interesting. He's German, from Frankfurt School, a neo-Marxist, interdisciplinary social theory institute for social research. The subjects of interest were critical theory, Hegelian Marxism, social theory, psychoanalysis, aesthetics and musicology, mass media. He was part of the avant-garde scene at the time. Mother was a devout Catholic. He was a child music prodigy, playing Beethoven at age 6. His love for music led him to experiment with music in children, for, you know, psychological study. That got him kicked out of the country. So he spent time abroad. He spent years in Oxford and, you know, in America. After the war, Andorno wrote many books. Reason and Revolution, The Work of Art in the Age of Mechanical Reproduction, Eclipse of Reason, The Fear of Freedom, Dialectic of Enlightenment, Mienima Merilia, Eros and Civilization, One-Dimensional Man, Negative Dialects, The Structural Transformation of Public Sphere, The Theory of Communicative Action. The one I'm interested in is Aesthetic Theory, where he explains the role in art in society. He talks of what legacy art, you know, has for culture and, you know, history and, you know, the study of the 60s, culture, and the, you know, a lot more mod cons, a lot more drugs, miniskirts, and, like, psychedelic music, and alternative knowledge, like, you know, ancient foreign traditions and practices. And but with the 60s, the protests are also as suspicious as the ones we had recently with Occupy and these kind of mock protests that they stage, the state stages. And for example, Abby Hoffman being a shill, and many other characters. But there must be reasons for this that, you know, sometimes if you can't work something out, you know, it does make sense, but just haven't figured it out yet. But I feel the government, they must put on these mock protests at certain times. With when Occupy came out, it was around the same time as the Arabic Spring, like how Arabia just, you know, that's when Uranus went into Aries, and astrologically that really meant, yeah, revolution. People subconsciously would have this urge to just rebel against any authority. And to kind of quarantine, or like to kind of have a safe demolition, like they've brought up Occupy to kind of simmer down this sort of subconscious. Yeah, so